Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Yeah, it is Friday. Welcome to the program. My name is Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio. We have several emails that came in. They're brief letters that we want to share with you tonight. Also, thanks to the website and the broadcast news outlet in the UK, Channel 4, because thanks to them, we have a detailed news report. It runs about 3.5 minutes of the January 30th, 2003 Bush-Blair meeting. Yet another incriminating memo. Remember the Downing Street memo. This is the one where Channel 4 reads directly from a memo that has come into their possession that George Bush and apparently Tony Blair were in agreement to attack Iraq no matter what the outcome of any UN resolution or not, weapons of mass destruction or not. Again, we are sitting here in the United States with a man who should be impeached and put on trial. Literally, I tend to shy away from the war criminal or war crimes international tribunal thing. I don't know why. We have Milosevic on trial in The Hague. I guess he's still on trial. This show trial of Saddam that's occurring in Iraq has become nothing more than what the show trials in the Soviet Union back in the 20s and 30s, same thing. But George W. Bush, without a doubt, is a war criminal. And 9/11 was a fraud perpetrated on the United States. George Bush and the Bush crime family are deliberately involved, consciously involved in the attack on the country. There's enough evidence out there now to try George Bush, whether he's president or not, for, in a political sense, crimes against humanity and war crimes, in a criminal sense, mass murder. Now, I'll stand by that statement for the rest of the time that I do talk radio, for the rest of my life. Period. That's it. There is no question any longer for me. If you're still wrestling with it, continue your struggle, and I certainly honor your struggle. I've struggled with this for what's it been, Kathy? Almost 5 years? And it's just beyond any doubt for me now. What we saw on CNN and MSNBC and so on and so forth on September 11, 2001, was a carefully orchestrated attack on this country by the Bush crime family. Now, how they did it remains to be explored by minds a lot sharper and more scientific than mine. But I don't have any doubt any longer. So we're going to play this for you, and it's a good thing the Brits still have a fairly active, fairly independent press, because no network news in the United States is reporting this story. Keith Olbermann covered it last night. We brought it up last night. But you'll notice, even though Olbermann covered it, it didn't make it to NBC Nightly News or CBS or ABC. Of course, it went on Fox, screw Fox. Not seeing it nowhere. But we'll play some of the freaking British newscast for you tonight, for Christ's sake. British newscast. Not ours. Theirs. Okay. Deep breath. This is February, right? What's the date, Kathy? Is this the third? Second? Third? The third? This is the month in the United States for people listening outside the U.S. And black folk here will understand what I'm talking about. And black folk is a euphemism. Ain't no black folk in this country. They're only those of us who are everybody in this country, part black, part white. But we still play that game in the United States. So for those of you listening outside the U.S., this is the month here in the U.S. that it's okay and legal to be black. This is February. Every February, black folk get to be legal for a whole 28 days. Leap year, they get 29. But this is the month, say February, where it's legal to be black. This is where everybody talks about your history and talks about your heroes and talks about, well, they tend not to want to talk about the lynching and the the slavery and the mass killing, you know, only peripherally or you know, out there on the edges. But so for those of you outside the United States who don't understand what Black History Month is about, it's the month in the U.S. where it's legal to be black. Now, this country is deeply racist, always has been, always will be. There's no way out of it. Racism in the United States is the same thing as the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians in the Middle East. It will never, ever, 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 ever be resolved. Ever. And racism in this country will never, ever, 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 ever be resolved. Unless in Israel, Palestine, intermarry, drop the tribal nonsense and realize that y'all are brothers and sisters. United States, intermarry, drop the tribal nonsense and understand that we're all brothers and sisters. That's the only way to do it. And that'll never happen. It was very offensive, though, the other day, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, on the day that Coretta Scott King passed, he read a statement. He said, "While we say goodbye to Mrs. King today, we must honor her life by working toward the shared vision of American society that values individual freedom, equality, and content of character above all else." And when he said that, you know, I wanted to, now listen carefully, NSA, listen carefully how I'm going to say this. I wanted to build an effigy of Bill Frist and beat the living Christ out of it. Because last June, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who was a white racist from Tennessee, refused repeated requests for a roll call vote that would have put senators on the record on a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws. Bill Frist wouldn't allow it to go to a vote. You racist son of a bitch, you. Oh, calm down, Malloy. We're only 10 minutes into the movie. Senate Majority Leader Bill, this is the way it was reported here in our local Journal Constitution, picked up by Raw Story. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist refused repeated requests for a roll call vote that would have put senators on the record on a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws. As dozens of descendants of lynching victims watched from the Senate gallery, the resolution was adopted Monday evening under a voice vote procedure that did not require any senators' presence. 80 senators, however, had signed as co-sponsors, putting themselves on record as supporting the resolution. By the time the Senate recessed Tuesday evening, 5 other senators had added their names as co-sponsors, leaving 15 Republicans who had not. Among them, Bill Frist. The resolution was adopted under what is called unanimous consent, whereby it is adopted so long as no senator expresses opposition. But the group that was the driving force behind the resolution had asked Frist for a formal procedure that would have required all 100 senators to vote. And the group had asked that the debate take place during business hours, during the week, instead of Monday evening when most senators are traveling back to the Capitol. Frist declined both requests. Pretty gutless, huh? Jan Cohen, the wife of former Defense Secretary William Cohen and one of the key figures in the Committee for a Formal Apology, he's a Republican, by the way, Clinton's Defense Secretary, expressed outrage over the lack of a roll call vote. She said, "America is home of the brave, but I'm afraid there may be a few cowards who have to cower to their very narrow-minded and backward, hateful constituency. They're hiding out, and it's reminiscent of a pattern of hiding out under a hood in the night, riding past, scaring people." So Bill Frist, damn you. Anyway, if you're an American with one drop, that's the rule of African blood, welcome to the world of legal existence for just a month. Come the 1st of April, I'm sorry, the 1st of March, you go back to your January status.
I was disappointed, frankly, in the vote I got in the African American community. I put people in my cabinet. I put people in my sub cabinet.
I put people in my basement. I put people in my black my sub-basement, you know, black people. I don't know why they don't like me in the black community. Cynthia in Philadelphia wrote in, "Hey, Mike, love you, love the show, but please cut us poor bastards a break, us real bastards, who got the name of the old-fashioned way. I'm an ex-official of the adoptee rights organization, Bastard Nation." You can check, this is for real, you can check them out, bastards.org. "And it just pains me to hear you refer to the Bush bastard so often. Yes, he's illegitimate, but we non-criminal, non-fascist bastards really don't like to be associated with the likes of him. Why not stick to the Bush son of a bitch, which is so completely appropriate in this case?" Somewhat tongue-in-cheek, Cynthia in Philadelphia. Well, go to the website, bastards.org. It is a legitimate website of people who try to get right. I don't know how else to put it. I don't know. Thanks, Cynthia. In October and January, there were commission hearings on George W. Bush's guilt where it concerns war crimes, crimes against humanity, and other high crimes. These hearings were held back in October and just wound up, I believe, January 22nd or 23rd at the Riverside Church in New York City. And there has been testimony was taken, witnesses were sworn in. And I want to just share a little bit. He was found guilty, by the way. And if you can't stand any more pictures of dead Iraqi children or American moms and dads and wives and sons and daughters grieving over flag-draped coffins, you might want to stay away from some of the websites that are reporting on the conclusions of George W. Bush's war crimes trial. We're in a world of hurt, Truth Seeker. We really are. I mean, we really are. I'm not even going to bust up on right-wingers tonight because they're in as much of a world of hurt as we are, as normal people are. But Theodore Roosevelt, Republican, way back the turn of the century, said, "When the powers of state that have been mandated to reach out and protect the interests of people begin to usurp the Constitution and undermine our laws, people must rise up and speak against the regime. If the citizens fail to hear that call, they should be charged with patriotic treason." Now, the people he's referring to are you and me. Yesterday, the International Commission of Inquiry on Crimes Against Humanity committed by the Bush administration ruled that the administration was guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity for launching a war against Iraq, for instituting torture, for committing people to indefinite detention, for hampering efforts to control global warming, and for deliberately failing to prevent the loss of life during Hurricane Katrina. The commission appointed a panel of jurists to hear the testimony and examine the documented evidence to support the indictments it filed against the Bush administration. Over the course of 5 days in October and January, the tribunal held unprecedented public hearings, hearing testimony from more than 44 witnesses, including internationally known experts, victims, and whistleblowers. We quoted from this the other night. General Janet Karpinski, who is in charge of Abu Ghraib, some of her testimony. The former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, Craig Murray, testified on the use of horrible forms of torture by the U.S.-led occupation forces and said, quote, "I'd rather die than have someone tortured to save my life," end quote. Brigadier General Janice Karpinski, former commander of Abu Ghraib prison, said that a senior general ordered prison guards to treat all Iraqi detainees like dogs. And former U.N. Arms Inspector Scott Ritter described in detail how the Bush administration was fully aware that Saddam Hussein possessed no weapons of mass destruction and that Iraq opposed no threat to the United States, damaging the administration's case for the illegal war. After the public hearings and a thorough examination of the available evidence, the tribunal ruled that the U.S. President George W. Bush and his administration committed crimes that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity, acts, it said, shocked the conscience of mankind. The following is a summary of the findings for each of the five indictments. First one, wars of aggression. There's overwhelming evidence that the Bush administration launched and is still engaged in a war of aggression against Iraq in violation of international law, including the Nuremberg Principles, Geneva Conventions of 1949, the UN Charter, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In doing so, the Bush administration has committed war crimes and crimes against humanity. 2, torture, rendition, and illegal detention and murder indictment. The Bush administration committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in conducting its so-called war on terrorism. It did this by creating and applying policies and practices that violate international law and international human rights. Global warming, number 3. Scientist testimony supported a conclusion that the Bush administration committed crimes against humanity by its environmental policies and practices that appear to support corporate interests rather than human lives. We'll have the last two for you in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
No subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
26 before the hour. Earth, 26. Yeah, that's right. We are reading the results of the International Commission of Inquiry on Crimes Against Humanity committed by the Bush administration. The commission ruled that this administration is, in fact, guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity for launching war against Iraq, for instituting torture and indefinite detention, for hampering efforts to control global warming, deliberately failing to prevent the loss of life during Hurricane Katrina. So let me go back to the summary of the findings for each of the five indictments. We had wars of aggression, torture, rendition, illegal detention, and murder indictment, the global warming. Hurricane Katrina, the Bush administration's deliberate failings in preventing the foreseeable devastation caused by Katrina and its failure to respond efficiently after the disaster constitute crimes against humanity. At the commission's press conference, Ajemu Sankofa, executive director of Physicians for Social Responsibility, New York, and one of the panel of jurists clearly stated that, quote, the historical significance of this tribunal is that American citizens, civil society, is demonstrating courage to stand up and speak its definition of the truth against a wholly orchestrated system of deliberate deceptions, end quote. Abdin Jabara, another panelist and former president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, said, quote, we want people to understand Iraq is not simply a war of choice, but an actual war of aggression from which flow certain legal consequences. Torture is often reported as abuse rather than torture. So we need to change the way these items are talked about for people to face the fact of what this government is doing. Activist Heather Hurwitz of World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, said that thousands were gathering tomorrow, February 4th, in Washington to call for the Bush administration's resignation. Ms. Hurwitz confronted Rumsfeld with the commission's rulings shortly after its release, but she was quickly taken away by security personnel. After she was removed, Rumsfeld joked, we'll count her as undecided. And we played that last night, I believe. When she knew of Rumsfeld's comment, Hurwitz said that, quote, war crimes and crimes against humanity are not joking matters. Rumsfeld's attitude typifies this administration's brazen immorality and lawlessness, and this is why it must step down. Now, I'm going to go on the record here for two specific things. A, the attack on this country on September 11, 2001 was orchestrated in full by the Bush administration, the Project for New American Century, and every single individual that constitutes what I euphemistically call the Bush crime family. It is a criminal enterprise. They did this to us. Now, if you let that thought, this is what I've resisted for coming up on 5 years now. I should say, entertain the idea that a government of my country would do this. Even though I knew the historical precedent, of what the Joint Chiefs presented to John Kennedy way back in 61, 62, to do precisely what was done on September 11, 2001. They wanted to do it 40 years ago. Only Cuba was to be the victim, not Iraq. Operation Northwoods. If you don't know what it is, just do a Google on it. Just do it, okay? Familiarize yourself with it. Just go read it. Just go read it. The second thing is that the so-called President of the United States, George W. Bush, is in fact a war criminal. as much as Henry Kissinger is a war criminal, as much as Oliver North is a war criminal, as much as probably at least half of Bush's general staff are war criminals. They're responsible for murder, for death, crimes against humanity. I'm in complete and total agreement with this commission's findings. Totally. 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 Now, we want to play for you, thanks to Channel 4, the UK's Channel 4. We want to play 7 or 8 minutes long. We edited it down to a little over 3 minutes. Kathy, is that right? For the sake of just being concise, Kathy has edited it down to the points that are absolutely, utterly necessary for us to understand in this country. And again, keep in mind, not a single word of this is being reported by major news outlets or newspapers, television, radio, nowhere in this country.
It was the most critical meeting in the tense weeks before the Iraq War. Face-to-face talks in the White House between President Bush and Tony Blair, along with their most senior officials. Channel 4 News has seen a secret memo which details that discussion between the two leaders. The president makes it clear there'll be war on Saddam regardless of whether the UN passes a further resolution. The prime minister replies he is, quotes, solidly with the president. And George Bush even floats the idea of trying to lure Saddam into war by flying an American spy plane over Iraq painted in UN colors. Our political editor Gary Gibbon has this exclusive report.
The memo paints a picture of two leaders intensely aware that even though they think Saddam Hussein has done enough to justify war, much of the world is disagreeing and angry. The White House meeting memo conveys an air of desperation as the two leaders cast around for how world opinion might be turned.
The White House meeting memo says President Bush told Mr. Blair the U.S. was thinking of flying U-2 reconnaissance aircraft with fighter cover over Iraq, painted in UN colors. If Saddam fired on them, he would be in breach. The U.S. had in the past flown spy planes over Iraq. It had flown them in the colors and service of the U.N., but a senior U.N. source told us they were perfectly capable of flying above the range of Iraqi missiles, and the fighter escorts and talk of Saddam firing on them suggest to some that the U.S. was almost willing Saddam to strike out at the plane. According to the White House meeting memo, the Prime Minister said that a second Security Council resolution would provide an insurance policy against the unexpected and international cover, including with the Arabs. The White House meeting memo, seen by Channel 4 News outside the UK, records that President Bush said the US would put its full weight behind efforts to get another resolution and would twist arms and even threaten. But he had to say that if ultimately we failed, military action would follow anyway. Tony Blair responds that he is solidly with the president.
All right, that is a 3 minute cut. You can get this. You can get the entire thing by going to Channel 4, UK's Channel 4's website. It's there, right, Kathy? The whole thing is there. Now, on the heels of that, now the occasional special on PBS, the February 3rd edition, which I believe is tonight, our good friend David Brancaccio is now the moderator of that program since Bill Moyers was let go. And what they're discussing, surprise, surprise, it says here, you can go to PBS.org and check on now, this week. It says, on the third anniversary of former Secretary of State Colin Powell's landmark speech to the United Nations laying out the Bush administration's case for the Iraq War, a high-level insider who helped write the address makes a startling claim. Powell's then chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, says what he later found out shocked him, that much of Powell's speech was false. He says, quote, I participated in a hoax on the American people, the international community, and the United Nations Security Council, end quote. Now, reports on the serious doubts that existed about the key evidence being used by the American government at the very time Paul's speech was being planned and delivered. Now, when you have the chief of staff of the Secretary of State of the United States at a time when the lies, fabrications were being put together to take this country to war, which has now resulted in approaching 2,500 dead Americans, thousands upon thousands wounded. Actual death toll of Americans is probably closer to 8,000. Anywhere from 50 to 100,000 dead Iraqis. If that's not mass murder, truth seeker, what is it? What is it? Somebody tell me what that is. That's a war crime. But when you have Powell's chief of staff, Secretary of State's chief of staff saying, quote, I participated in a hoax on the American people, the international community, the United Nations Security Council. My God, I, what else is there to talk about other than the fact that the United States now, do you have any doubt? Do you have any doubt? I mean, if you do, fair enough. But I would just have to wonder, how could you, after the Downing Street memo, after Scott Ritter's testimony, Scott Ritter's been trying for 3 years to convince people, after what Mohammed al-Baradi discovered, the guy, I forget his name, that Bush sent, the weapons inspector, who came back and said, Dalfour, all of this information, do you still think that we went to war based on a legitimate reason or based on the insanity of the psychopathic son of a bitch in the White House? Huh?
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
If this regime will murder 2,600 of its own citizens, that's how many Americans were killed when 3,000 died on that day. If they will murder 2,600 in one fell swoop, there is nothing they won't do. If they will send people to other countries to be tortured, there's nothing they won't do. If they will determine that the First and Fourth Amendments and Fifth Amendments, the U.S. Constitution, are no longer operable, there's nothing that they won't do. If you had any doubts, and I know most of you who listen to this program have not had any doubts about the complicity of this criminal enterprise and the attack on this country, remember what happened when the 9/11 Commission, as lumpy a joke as that collection of freaks really was, remember when Bush and Cheney were asked to come and give testimony, and they had to go together. They had to go hand in hand, and they refused to give sworn testimony. Remember that? Every single thing that has been requested or demanded of this criminal regime, these Nazis in the White House, has been denied or refused. The current investigation on the Senate panel demanding documents on U.S. spying, that Senate panel, headed by a Republican, of course, is being told to go screw itself. It just doesn't stop. You understand? The Project for New American Century, which are these neocons, and no, they're not all Zionists, American Zionists, or not. They're not. Zalmay Khalilzad is there, who is now our ambassador to Iraq. There are so-called Christians on that group. It doesn't make any difference what their religious affiliation is, and I know a lot of people want to reduce it to a religious affiliation. No, these are Americans who truly believe in utter military control of the entire planet. Now, that says ugly things for people like you and me. It really does. The recent contract of several hundred million dollars that was awarded to Kellogg Brown and Root regarding the refurbishing of these detention camps around the country. We understand what that is. If you haven't read about that, and God knows I've gotten about 30 emails on it, if you're not aware of it, then you need to check it out. You need to be aware of this stuff. You really do. This is not, you know, where we are now is not in a place where it's just political gamesmanship back and forth between Democrats and Republicans or the left and the right or, you know, well, everything will be okay in the next election or everything will be okay in the next presidential election. That's not where we are. I am really, really, really concerned, too, by the way, that the Bush administration is planning another attack on the United States that is going to be much more severe than the attack that they engineered on September 11, 2001, that's going to result in horrendous damage and destruction, and is going to be their excuse or justification for putting the country into martial law. I hate to think that way. I can't believe I'm thinking that way. I can't believe I'm sitting on a radio program where they're actually paying me a salary and I'm saying this. This is stunning to me. This is heartbreaking to me. It is. I mean, it just breaks my heart. And to think that, and not think, but to feel like there's nothing we can do about it at this point. Short of calling for armed insurrection. And if I do that, I'm off the air. I don't know what to do. If you have any suggestions, you know, send them an email. This is from Sun in Michigan. Sun sent me the email. It's freewayblogger.com, who I think is just incredible, whoever Freeway Blogger is, had a thought. Would America understand the cost of this war better if they knew this? The average length of a casket, 7 feet. Current U.S.-Iraq war dead, alleged, 2,245. 7 times 2,245 equals 15,715 feet. Which equals 2.97 miles if laid end to end. Got a couple more items here, and some phone calls, your phone calls, and the reading of 1984. It is Friday night. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. What we are talking about, what I'm talking about tonight, is the final declaration on my part, just my part. You know, I'm not trying to influence anybody. This is just for me that the Bush crime family was directly responsible for the attack on this country on September 11, 2001. There's another one coming. These are dictatorial murderers. Everything else flows from that. There. Somebody sent me a link yesterday, and it's 4 Flash movies. And if you want to get a pencil real quick, I'll wait, and I'll give you the link, and you can check them out. I bet you won't be able to get all through all 4 of them. I sat there last night at about 1:30 in the morning, 1:45 in the morning, after we got home. And started to look at them. They're about the dead in Iraq and the United States. And after the first one, I could feel the tears in my eyes. After the second one, I just had to turn off the computer. And I went upstairs to bed, and Kathy said, "What's wrong?" Because I was right on the verge of sobbing, you know, starting to cry fairly strong. I said, "I just can't take it anymore." So much of this I relate to Molly, obviously. Not that without Molly, I wouldn't feel compassion for these Iraqi civilians or American soldiers and their families. I would. But you know, when you have a little kid in your house, you kind of relate kid tragedies to your own, you know, how would you handle it? And that's what's been ricocheting through my head now for months, a couple of years, I guess. Ever since these photographs of dead Iraqi children, dead Palestinian children, dead Israeli children, I just can't stand it. I can't do it. Can you? But in the immediate moment here, these pictures of these dead Iraqi children, and some of the photographs are just, they're grinding. I mean, you can't look at them and not, I don't know, just feel yourself start to disintegrate. I'm serious. You know, you if it affects you the way it affects me, you start to feel your molecular structure to shake a bit. Do you understand what I mean by that? That's not probably the proper way to put it, but it shakes me down to that level where I feel like on a cellular level I'm going to start to fall apart here. There was one particular picture of a dead young mother, probably in her 20s, in Iraqi, and her child, 4, 5, 6 years old, screaming and reaching out to the corpse. That's when I had to just shut it down. But what the Bush administration has done with our country, with our military, with us, is beyond anything that I ever thought that anyone could do. I know we have a checkered history of the United States. I understand that. I'm not so naive as not to understand what we have done around the world over the past 150 years. Even though we were warned by the framers not to get involved in foreign adventures, stay here, mind our own business. I know what we've done. But this Iraq thing is right up there with Vietnam. And I don't know how you deal with it. Maybe the way I deal with it, I told Kathy, I said, this is why evolution gave us avoidance and denial. You know, two key aspects of survival. Turn away. Don't think. Avoidance and denial. But it's becoming almost impossible for me to use those key evolutionary survival techniques. You know, survival of my mind. When I see those pictures, I can't do it. When I see the pictures of young American men, boys really, come on, who are shipped home, I'm talking about the ones who are still alive. How are they going to breathe? They have tracheostomies. They are machines. Half their heads are blown away. Their legs are blown off. Arms are blown off. Guts are blown out. And they're still alive. And I think about all of this was done on the basis of carefully crafted lies and distortions. Jesus Christ, America. We're not going to do anything? Got an email here from Johnny. He says, this is from warcriminal.blogspot.com. Title is Killers Go to Hell, right? Just not that long. What's the difference between a murderer, mass murderer, and a war criminal? Well, it basically boils down to the number of people you've killed. For example, someone who kills his wife and her boyfriend would be a murderer. Timothy McVeigh would be a mass murderer. President Bush would be a war criminal. Now, the question is, do killers go to hell? This man that proclaims himself as a Christian yet kills thousands of people in an illegal war, going against the ruling of the UN and through lying to the American people, this war would never have happened if he hadn't lied about why he was going to war. He went to war to make himself and the rest of the Bush crime family rich. He went for oil, and to steal billions of the American taxpayers' dollars. There was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction, and he knew that. Don't fool yourself into thinking that he had bad information. He's stupid, but he's not totally retarded. He's just evil. Now, again, do killers go to hell? President Bush is wanting to tax our already outrageous insurance payments to help pay for the outrageous debt that he placed us under. This will certainly cause people that were barely able to pay their insurance payments to cancel, and people will die because of this legislation. This man is ruthless and evil. He is only concerned with the welfare and wallets of his rich buddies, and he does not give a damn about you or me. So one last time, do killers go to hell? I sure as hell hope so. Signed, Johnny. Oh, I don't care about the literary depth of things like that. The emotion is pure and raw, and that's art. This is from Roger. Mike, you missed one key point Monday. You missed the point about the Christo-fascists, the churches. These right-wing freaks would never have gotten where they are if they had not been able to co-opt the pulpit. Vote for Ronald Reagan or you're going to burn in hell. Vote Republican or the queers will get your children. Give George Bush thousands of dollars and God will bless you a hundredfold. We've had nearly 30 years of this swill from miscreants like Jerry Falwell. Before this, we had Christian jihadists such as the likes of Phyllis Schlafly spreading her bile since the late 50s. Human nature is the same everywhere. Most people are warlike, nationalistic, and easily swayed by invocations of God. This is what fueled all dictators. They all had enablers in the church. I see no change coming short of a quantum leap in human evolution. By the way, Mike, did you pose for National Lampoon in 1972 holding a big old 12-gauge? Well, let me answer it this way. Kathy, you know that picture that we have on the picture wall where I've got the gun pointed at Jack? Right? This comes from Fat Tony. I'm sure you and your audience already know about what Noam Chomsky said about war crimes in Fallujah, but this is just a reminder, something to think about. Chomsky's on our invasion of Fallujah. Quote, well, with Fallujah, the U.S. didn't chuck out the women and children. It bombed them out. There was about a month of bombing, bombed out of the city. If they could get out somehow, a couple hundred thousand people fled, and some got out. And as you say, men were kept in, and we don't know what happened after that. We don't estimate the casualties for which we're responsible. But what was dramatic about Fallujah was that it was not kept secret. So you could see on the front page of the New York Times a big picture of the first major step in the offensive, namely the capture of the Fallujah General Hospital. More of this in a second.
Nobody can threaten this country. Oh, they may be able to bomb up buildings.
21 past the hour. Back to the statement from Noam Chomsky that Fat Tony sent in. Chomsky's talking about our invasion of Fallujah. He says, what was dramatic about Fallujah was that it was not kept secret. So you could see it on the front page of the New York Times, a big picture of the first major step in the offensive, namely the capture of the Fallujah General Hospital. And there's a picture of people lying on the ground, soldier guarding them. And then there's a story that tells that patients were taken from their beds. Patients and doctors were forced to lie on the floor and manacled under guard, and the picture described it. The President of the United States is subject to the death penalty under U.S. law for that crime alone. I mean, that's a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions. The Geneva Conventions say explicitly and unambiguously that hospitals must be protected. Hospitals and medical staff and patients must be protected by all combatants in any conflict. You couldn't have a more grave breach of the Geneva Conventions than that. There's a War Crimes Act in the United States passed by a Republican Congress in 1996, which says that grave breaches of the Geneva Convention are subject to the death penalty. And that doesn't mean the soldier that committed them. That means the commanders. They weren't thinking about the United States, of course, but take it literally. And that's what it means. And as Chomsky said in another setting, he said, I believe in elementary moral truisms. Namely, if something is a crime when it's committed against us, it's a crime when we commit it against others. If there is a simpler moral truism than that, I'd like to hear it. Oh, and by the way, one of the Federalist judges, a U.S. District Court judge in Washington, set January 2007 as the trial date for Irving Libby, the White House official who was indicted on 5 counts of perjury and obstruction of justice, that's lying to the FBI, yada, regarding Valerie Plame case, after the 2006 elections. And some people wonder why I call it a crime family. All right, let's see if we can get some phone calls in here. Jeez. Mike is calling from Tacoma, Washington. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, you really are the Prince of Darkness, and that is, you know, that, I love you, man. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, thanks, Mike.
I agree with you about the administration and not just George Bush, but Dick Cheney especially, really perpetrated the crimes of 9/11. And the best source of that on the Internet is from the wilderness, Michael Rupert.
Right. Yeah, I'm very familiar with Michael.
I'm 35 years old. I'm active duty Air Force, and I'm finally starting to see the light, you know, and I really appreciate what you're doing on the radio.
Yikes. That must be rough for you.
It is. It's a shock to everything I believed in. You know, I was special forces in the Air Force. There's only 2 jobs in the Air Force, pararescue, combat control. And I got out a year ago because of I don't believe in what they're asking me to do. I'm still active, but I'm doing a desk job.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to quote 3 things off of Rupert's webpage that really support everybody's belief. And
if you could do it quickly. I only have about a minute here.
You bet. There's the means, motive, and opportunity. Dick Cheney and the Secret Service, that's the means.
Uh-huh.
Motive, peak oil, and opportunity, 9/11 war games. I'm not going to say more, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. I do, Mike, and I know a lot of people who listen to this program. We've had Michael Rupert on a couple of times over the past 5-6 years. I've only been with Air America less than 2, but and he and I have corresponded before. I've seen the video that he put together about what was it, Kathy? Was it Iran-Contra? I think it was Iran-Contra when the crack epidemic that was started in this country by the CIA. So the evidence that anyone needs is there. All it takes is to open your eyes and take a look. I don't know. I would feel very torn if I were in active military right now, knowing what you know. Like I said, it must be hell because you can't. I know you have your obligation to finish up, but it must be hell knowing what you know and serving not in the U.S. military, but serving under the command of a criminal enterprise like this.
To add to that, Mike, I was really disappointed to hear that my top general, Richard Myers, was part of 9/11, and I put my head down when I heard about it.
I know. It's awful. It's awful. He was the first chairman of the Joint Chiefs who was Air Force, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he orchestrated the decommissioning of the air scramble fighter jocks. That's why they didn't respond to the hijacked aircraft, and I'm sad to say Richard Myers was in on it. But you know what? I have 11 years in. I got to take care of myself and my family.
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear.
Keep on going.
All right, thanks for checking in, Mike. Watch your back, okay?
All right, you too.
All right, take care.
Blast them to hell. She came around.
It's about 25 before the hour. Tonight's reading from 1984, where we left off. Winston Smith and his associate at work, Sim, are having lunch. Sim is working on the dictionary that will contain all the newspeak words. And Sim had just told Winston that he's having a good time destroying language. C Sim bit hungrily into his bread and swallowed a couple of mouthfuls, then continued speaking with a sort of pedant's passion. His thin, dark face had become animated. His eyes had lost their mocking expression and had grown almost dreamy. It's a beautiful thing, the destruction of words. Of course, the great wastage is in the verbs and adjectives, but there are hundreds of nouns that can be got rid of as well. It isn't only the synonyms, there are also the antonyms. After all, what justification is there for a word which is simply the opposite of some other word? A word contains its opposite in itself. Take good, for instance. If you have a word like good, what need is there for a word like bad? Ungood will do just as well. Better, because it's an exact opposite, which the other is not. Or again, if you want a stronger version of good, what sense is there in having a whole string of vague, useless words like excellent and splendid and all the rest of them? Plus good covers the meaning, or double plus good. If you want something stronger still, of course, we use these forms already, but in the final version of Newspeak, there will be nothing else. In the end, the whole notion of goodness and badness will be covered by only six words. In reality, only one word. Don't you see the beauty of that, Winston? It was Big Brother's idea originally. Of course, he added as an afterthought. A sort of vapid eagerness flitted across Winston's face at the mention of Big Brother. Nevertheless, Sim immediately detected a certain lack of enthusiasm. You haven't a real appreciation of Newspeak, Winston, he said almost sadly. Even when you write it, you're still thinking in old speak. I've read some of those pieces that you write in the Times occasionally. They're good enough, but they're translations. In your heart, you'd prefer to stick to old speak with all its vagueness and its useless shades of meaning. You don't grasp the beauty of the destruction of words. Do you know that Newspeak is the only language in the world whose vocabulary gets smaller every year? Winston did know that, of course. He smiled sympathetically, he hoped, not trusting himself to speak. Sim bit off another fragment of the dark-colored bread, chewed it briefly, and went on. Don't you see that the whole aim of Newspeak is to narrow the range of thought? In the end, we shall make thought crime literally impossible because there will be no words in which to express it. Every concept that can ever be needed will be expressed in exactly one word, with its meaning rigidly defined and all its subsidiary meanings rubbed out and forgotten. Already in the 11th edition, we're not far from that point, but the process will still be continuing long after you and I are dead. Every year, fewer and fewer words, and the range of consciousness always a little smaller. Even now, of course, there's no reason or excuse for committing thought crime. It's merely a question of self-discipline, reality control. But in the end, there won't be any need even for that. The revolution will be complete when the language is perfect. Newspeak is Ingsoc, and Ingsoc is Newspeak, he added with a sort of mystical satisfaction. Has it ever occurred to you, Winston, that by the year 2050, at the very latest, not a single human being will be alive who could understand such a conversation as we're having right now? Except, began Winston doubtfully, and he stopped. It had been on the tip of his tongue to say, except the proles, but he checked himself, not feeling fully certain that this remark was not in some way unorthodox. Sim, however, had divined what he was about to say. The proles are not human beings, he said carelessly. By 2050, earlier probably, all real knowledge of old speak will have disappeared. The whole literature of the past will have been destroyed. Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, Byron will exist only in Newspeak versions. Not merely changed into something different, but actually changed into something contradictory of what they used to be. Even the literature of the party will change. Even the slogans will change. How could you have a slogan like, freedom is slavery, when the concept of freedom has been abolished? The whole climate of thought will be different, Winston. In fact, there will be no thought, as we understand it now. Orthodoxy means not thinking, not needing to think. Orthodoxy is unconsciousness. One of these days, thought Winston, with sudden deep convictions, Sim will be vaporized. He's too intelligent. He sees too clearly and speaks too plainly. The party does not like such people. One day he will disappear. It is written in his face. Winston had finished his bread and cheese. He turned a little sideways in his chair to drink his mug of coffee. At the table on his left, the man with the strident voice was still talking remorselessly away. A young woman who was perhaps a secretary and who was sitting with her back to Winston was listening to him and seemed to be eagerly agreeing with everything that he said. From time to time, Winston caught some such remark as, "I think you're so right. I do so agree with you," uttered in a youthful and rather silly feminine voice. But the other voice never stopped for an instant, even when the girl was speaking. Winston knew the man by sight, though he knew no more about him than that he held some important post in the fiction department. He was a man of about 30, with a muscular throat and a large, mobile mouth. His head was thrown back a little, and because of the angle at which he was sitting, his spectacles caught the light and presented to Winston two blank discs instead of eyes. What was slightly horrible was that from the stream of sound that poured out of his mouth, it was almost impossible to distinguish a single word. Just once, Winston caught a phrase, "complete and final elimination of Goldsteinism," jerked out very rapidly and, as it seemed, all in one piece, like a line of typecast solid. For the rest, it was just a noise, a quack, quack, quacking. And yet, though you could not actually hear what the man was saying, you could not be in any doubt about its general nature. He might be denouncing Goldstein and demanding sterner measures against thought criminals and saboteurs. He might be fulminating against the atrocities of the Eurasian army. He might be praising Big Brother or the heroes on the Malabar front. It made no difference. Whatever it was, you could be certain that every word of it was pure orthodoxy, pure Ingsoc. As he watched the eyeless face with the jaw moving rapidly up and down, Winston had a curious feeling that this was not a real human being, but some kind of dummy. It was not the man's brain that was speaking, it was his larynx. The stuff that was coming out of him consisted of words, but it was not speech in the true sense. It was a noise uttered in unconsciousness, like the quacking of a duck. Sim had fallen silent for a moment, and with the handle of his spoon was tracing patterns in the puddle of stew. The voice from the other table quacked rapidly on, easily audible in spite of the surrounding din. "There is a word in Newspeak," said Sim. I don't know whether you know it. "Duck speak. To quack like a duck. It is one of those interesting words that have two contradictory meanings. Applied to an opponent, it is abuse. Applied to someone you agree with, it is praise." "Unquestionably, Sim will be vaporized," Winston thought again. He thought it with a kind of sadness, although well knowing that Sim despised him and slightly disliked him, and was fully capable of denouncing him as a thought criminal if he saw any reason for doing so, there was something subtly wrong with Sim. There was something that he lacked, discretion, aloofness, a sort of saving stupidity. You could not say that he was unorthodox. He believed in the principles of Ingsoc. He venerated Big Brother. He rejoiced over victories. He hated heretics, not merely with sincerity, but with a sort of restless zeal, an up-to-dateness of information which the ordinary party member did not approach. Yet a faint air of disreputability always clung to him. He said things that would have been better left unsaid. He had read too many books. He frequented the Chestnut Tree Cafe, haunt of painters and musicians. There was no law, not even an unwritten law, against frequenting the Chestnut Tree Cafe, yet the place was somehow ill-omened. The old, discredited leaders of the party had been used to gather there before they were finally purged. Goldstein himself, it was said, had sometimes been seen there years and decades ago. Sim's fate was not difficult to foresee, and yet it was a fact that if Sim grasped, even for 3 seconds, the nature of his, Winston's, secret opinions, he would betray him instantly to the thought police. So would anybody else, for that matter. But Sim, more than most, zeal was not enough. Orthodoxy was unconsciousness. Sim looked up. "Here comes Parsons," he said. A few minutes ago, I suggest you get something to write with, because if you can stand this video, I want you to check it out. I know you've, if you're like me, you've probably had enough of this. You've reached emotional overload. I realize that's kind of a cheesy thing to say. It's not our cities that are being bombed. It's not our children that are being killed. I guess what it is the for me, it's a horrible sense of guilt that a person who claims to be the leader of the United States, where I live, where I have citizenship, is murdering, literally murdering people at will, at his whim, any place he chooses to. And the pictures of the children in Iraq, pictures of the dead mothers, the dead fathers, these are not soldiers. These are not so-called insurgents. These are people of Iraq, just people. The pictures of the dead Americans, the families of the dead Americans at these graveside ceremonies where the flag is folded and handed to sobbing family members just enmeshed in this wretchedness that this administration has dumped on us and the people in two other countries. It's just unbelievable. All right, here's what you write down, and if you've got the guts or the reserves, http://nobravery, NOBRAVERY, nobravery.c like Charlie, F like Frank, dot Huffington Post, just like it sounds, Huffington Post. com. Let me get it again. http://nobravery.cf.huffingtonpost.com. And if you can handle it. And there have been many. I mean, this is the most recent video. It's just extremely difficult, isn't it? Is it for you? I mean, I realize that my job requires me to be immersed in this stuff pretty much all the time. And so maybe I'm just overreacting emotionally to what these people have done. The Project for a New American Century approached Bill Clinton way back in 96, 97 with the blueprint for what the Bush crime family is doing right now. What was needed was a precipitating event, much like what happened on December 7, 1941. And they got their precipitating event, the bombing of the trade towers and the bombing of the Pentagon, and all of it put together by members of the Bush crime family. This was a deliberate action against us by our own people. And this is the part that causes waves of nausea to roll over me. Now, I'm not saying I had some flash of recognition and all of a sudden I'm coming out on this. No, not at all. We've been talking about this for 4 years. Ever since we read the book, we didn't read the book. We talked with one of the authors. What was that book about, by the two French, the French journalists and the French...
The Forbidden Truth.
Forbidden Truth. The one about how the Taliban was brought to Houston, Texas. And given an option. Go along with the program and let's build a pipeline or we're going to just bomb you into mush. And the Taliban more or less said, go screw yourself. And the Iraq thing was strictly for two purposes. The oil, which is going nowhere, just sitting in the ground, but primarily for military bases. You know, the no blood for oil thing is valid, but it is naked imperialistic American aggression that has taken us there. It is to control not just the Iraqi oil, and we're not going to control it. We're not going to control Iraq or Iran or any of the stands in that part of the world until these 12, 14, 15 military bases are completed, the ones that are being built. Iraq is going to be to the Middle East vis-a-vis the United States, what Honduras was to Central America, vis-a-vis the United States. The base of operations for mass murder, jailings, beatings, terror activities, torture, and control of natural resources. Period. Period. There is no other. Occam's razor. You know, somebody emailed me a week or so ago and reminded me, when all the facts are considered, probably the most correct explanation for a given series of events or an event is that which is the most simple. This is not difficult to understand. This is something we've been talking about. I've been working through trying to deny. Like I said, avoidance and denial, they're great evolutionary tools, and they have to be used at times. They have to be used at times. If not, we would all go just gibbering mad with the stuff that sometimes we face. Just as a function of being alive. But I'm at that point where even the little shreds of denial and avoidance that I tried to use just aren't working for me anymore. Are they still working for you, Truth Seeker? And this at this moment, I would just say quietly, I'm not talking about just liberals and Democrats. I'm talking about conservatives and Republicans. Are you folks able to handle this any better than Democrats or liberals? I just want to drop this into the mix, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. This is from the Institute for Public Accuracy. They put out a press release frequently. This one is from yesterday, and it has to do with the budget cuts that Bush has in his new budget, the costs and the consequences. A comment here from Avis Jones DeWeaver. She is the study director on poverty and income security at the Institute for Women's Policy Research. She said today, quote, following Hurricane Katrina, President Bush stood in New Orleans and made the strong statement that, quote, we have a duty to confront this poverty with bold action, end quote. The budget that passed the House of Representatives last night, which Bush is expected to sign shortly, made a mockery of that statement. This budget represents an attack on poor families. It will greatly increase their out-of-pocket health care expenses. It will mean some 255,000 fewer children will receive the child care assistance their families desperately need. It will result in some $8.4 billion lost in vital child support due to cuts in child support enforcement. It will mean delays in supplemental Social Security payments to the poor, to the disabled citizens, and cuts to foster families doing the right thing by taking in children that have nowhere else to go. This bill is shameful, and particularly so since the money saved here will not go to reduce the deficit, as some have implied, but instead will be used to offset much greater losses in revenue that we will experience as a result of more tax cuts for individuals with six-figure incomes and up. For a nation that strongly clings to the notion of morality, where are the ethics in that? This is just unbelievable. These are really demons that are running the United States. Children. They blow up children. Oh, I know these sons of bitches really get their bowels in an uproar about a collection of cells, a blastocyst, or something that is furiously, because of the forces of evolution, trying to implant on the uterine wall of a woman. But actual living, breathing children, whether they are Iraqi or Afghan or American, I just for our international audience that listens on the internet, I am ashamed to be a citizen of this country right now. I mean it. I'm just awash in shame. And I think that's part of the problem that I've been struggling with for the past a day or two on an acute level. It's chronic with me, isn't it with you? I mean, this has been one hell of a 5 years. It's horrifying. It's just horrifying. But the past few days, it's kind of reached some sort of peak with me. Maybe it was the watching what little hope I had in the party I used to be a member of, the Democratic Party, that they would rise to the occasion and deny this last fascist his seat on the Supreme Court, and they didn't. And I guess that kind of dashed whatever little shreds of hope I had that there was justice afoot, that there was morality still alive in this country. There is not. There is not. I mean, let's face it. We can probably spend a long period of time trying to reestablish the sort of morality or justice that our documents talk about. Again, I'm not so naive as to say that that morality and justice has always been there. No, but the documents laid out the blueprint for how to get to that level of justice and morality and truth and dignity. And this Bush organization, I've said this a million times, and I'm getting sick of it. I know you're probably sick of hearing it. I've never seen anything like this in my life. The utter contempt for life, all forms of life, children, young people, middle-aged people, old people, American people, people in other countries, the other forms of life on the planet, forests, animals, fish, it doesn't make any difference. Kill them all. Kill them all. If I were a believer, if I believed Christian superstition or Christian mythology, I'm not trying to piss you off if you're a Christian, but if I believe that stuff, this would truly be the Antichrist. No, this would be the devil. George Bush would be Satan. Satan walking. Maybe Cheney's foot problems the other day, we suggested this, his foot was turning into a cloven hoof. I've never seen this kind of evil in this country. Oh, I've seen it on the global scale, haven't you, or the global stage? You've seen it. I've seen it. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. But this, it's unreal. I wonder how much longer Air America is going to be producing programs and broadcasting them. I really do. I think about that a lot because Air America writes my paycheck. But I wonder how much, I do, I really do. I really, really do wonder how much longer. Because there are a couple of us on this network that are just absolute subversives, right? Or who are syndicated by this network. Not necessarily employed by the network, but syndicated by the network. Who are true threats in the sense of broadcast threats. I mean, we're certainly no threat to bringing down the regime, not by ourselves anyway, but because some of us have a microphone, the Bush crime family understands that power completely. That's why they utterly and absolutely control media in this country, with a few obvious exceptions. All right, let's do some phone calls. Richard is calling from Detroit. Richard, welcome to the program. Richard?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you,
Mike. Yeah, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, I haven't been able to call in a few months. I was working a 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, and when we couldn't get radio reception in the plant, so I would tape the show and then listen to it the next night. But I just wanted to let you know I've been keeping in touch.
Well, good.
All right?
Yeah.
And you know, I take issue with you on your two main points this week.
Okay.
It seems the first being that we're not going to take back control of Congress or do well in the elections this fall. Bush said in his press conference last Tuesday that the election is going to be about peace and prosperity. We don't have either.
Well, I know, but it doesn't make any difference what Bush says. Bush is a pathological liar. What I'm saying is it has nothing to do with Bush. It has to do with the fact that congressional districts have been so gerrymandered and the states have been so redistricted since 1994 when the Democrats seized control of the House,
yeah.
That there's only maybe, I think, two or three or four House seats really in play. And let's supposing Democrats win all four. It doesn't do a damn thing.
Well, you know, that's a good point.
One other word for you. Diebold, the voting machines. Any state that uses electronic voting machines without a paper trail is a state where voting no longer exists.
Yeah, but I'm thinking you're going to run into situations where, I mean, although, you know, you're right, incumbents get reelected, what, 92%. They'd be part of that rate in Haiti. When you got a president at 38%, and you got polls showing too wide a disparity for even Diebold to cover something up, you got a 6 or 8
Bush,
spread.
Bush,
one thing if it's close. But.
Right, but Bush isn't running. Here's the dichotomy.
But the issue of the election is going to be about Bush.
No, wait. This is the weird part. I don't get me wrong. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's all about Bush. But here's the weird part. People say, yeah, the Congress is controlled. Nobody can ever mount a decent challenge. But it's those other districts. My guy ain't so bad. So I'm going to go ahead because my guy brought a new road. My guy got a subsidy for the pig farms out here in the country. So my guy I'm going to vote for. Now, you multiply that over and over again, and this is why you have incumbency is almost guaranteed. It's, you know, people can say Bush's reputation is at 38% or what have you, but don't forget what Bush and Karl Rove, what their main platform is, fear. And people are terrified. I don't care what they tell the pollsters. Look, there's no point in you and I sitting around here bitching about this. Let's see what happens come, when is it, November 6th this year?
Something like that.
Yeah, let's just see what happens. I'm not trying to set myself up as some kind of a predictor. I learned a long time ago in politics, never make predictions. Hell, I predicted that Max Cleland would get reelected here as our senator in Georgia. Look what happened. Hold on a second, because I know you got another point.
Thanks.
And I want to keep you on, Richard, until we come back from the break. Just stay right there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Air America.
More of Mike Molloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Richard in Detroit. Sorry, we just got run over by the end of that segment. If you don't mind, I'll just expand a little bit further. About the real probability that Bush was involved directly, that the Bush crime family was involved directly. In the event of September 11, 2001, up to and including the planning of it. Take a look at, if you can find a new angle or use the old angles about how this son of a bitch got us into a war in Iraq. He tried and tried and tried to fabricate a legitimate reason to attack Saddam. He planned this preemptive strike and then figured out a way to justify it later. This is just, Richard, the latest revelation in how this Bush crime family trumps up or sexes up intel reports to come up with a weak excuse for their attack on Iraq. Okay? Now, they do this over and over again, like the illegal wiretapping program. Bush violates citizens' rights and then works backwards to try to figure out some flimsy legal, quote, explanation as a way to justify it. Look what happened with the events surrounding the smashing of the levees after Katrina in New Orleans. Look, look. They knew in advance that the storm that was bearing down on New Orleans would cause the levees to break. They knew this. Now the documentation is out there. And they did nothing. Why did they do nothing? Because they are racist killers. That's one reason. There's several more. So why is it a stretch, Richard, to say he was implicit, say he was complicit in the attack on the United States on September 11th? What was happening in that summer, Richard? His entire illegal, stolen presidency was hanging by a thread. His approval rating was in the toilet. The world was laughing at him. No one took him or his plan seriously. Something had to happen. He was handed a crucial intelligence report titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike Within the United States. And he just ignored it. Now, is he that stupid? Is Cheney, Rice, Wolfowitz, Rummy, any of these people? I don't know if you were listening to the program earlier, Richard, but a caller who's in the Air Force was commenting on General Richard Myers, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He's Air Force General. First Air Force General, I believe, ever to serve as chairman. Well, no, I take that back, because if you go all the way back, I think Lyman Lemnitzer back in the 60s, wasn't he Air Force General? Wasn't he a chairman? I don't know. It's been a long time, if ever, there was a chairman from the Air Force. Myers was involved, had to have been involved. This country did not respond, Richard. There was no activity whatsoever when the reports were screaming around that four jetliners or more had been hijacked at the same time and were heading towards targets of opportunity. They knew where these planes were heading. And nothing. Nothing. No response. I there's not enough time, and I don't have enough energy to get into all this. There are 1,000 websites out there, Richard, with everything you might need to know or be curious about. And all I can say to you is just, you know, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but just maintain that avoidance of denial as long as you can. You'll feel a lot more, you'll feel a lot less shaky. You know, I feel like whatever structure I had put together in my head about being an American, about living in this country, about, okay, we got our faults, okay, we got it, but you know, there's always the possibility, there's always a chance for, you know, to better ourselves, and I'm not just talking about financially, I'm talking about morally as well as physically. Better ourselves where it concerns the United States really, truly being that one society where justice can prevail, where truth can exist without being smashed into the ground. You know, I had my construct about the United States of America. It's been in there since I was in third, fourth grade and was pledging allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. You know, I was brought up with all that stuff. I went through it all. A lot of you are around my age group. You know what I'm talking about. Went through the Cold War. Went through, you know, our parents went through Depression, World War II. We went through Cold War, all kinds of little hot spots of wars where tens of thousands of people died, but we didn't really pay that much attention to it. You know, okay, Vietnam, okay, wow, what's going on there? You know, Panama, okay, Central America, okay, Lebanon, okay. There was always the hope to me that if I worked hard in a political sense, if I adopted a righteous attitude where it concerned politics, I could get pissed off at the Republicans and they would get pissed off at me, but somehow, you know, we'd work it out, that fairness would prevail. And that if I maintained a righteous attitude as best I could, even after 1963, and for the longest time, I thought, Jesus, God, Lee Harvey Oswald, you rotten little bastard, you know, but what about Jack Ruby? But what about, you know, on and on and on and on. And it took the longest damn time for this construct that I've held in my heart and my head about my country and my place in it, my kids' place in it, my grandchildren's place in it, you know. And it's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. To realize what has happened. You know, when I look inside myself and see the raging hatred I feel for right-wingers, knowing that they feel the same way about me. Knowing that if one approached me on the street, there would be an instant conflict. And only one of us would probably walk away without a busted nose and a bleeding lip. I mean, that's the depth of this anger and rage that this son of a bitchin' dictator has just spread over this country like swamp water. I've never seen anything like this. Even at the height of, as best I can remember, the height of the most recent Red Scare, which was back in the 50s, and even into the early 60s, I remember some of that. You know, the anger, the rage that I noticed from the older people, the more experienced people, politically aware people, that anger, that rage was directed kind of outward, you know, against those goddamn Soviets or those Chinese or those communists over there. And yeah, they got inside the heads of a few Americans and oh God, I hate them. But what Bush has done, he's forced us to hate each other. He's brought all that hatred and filth and negativity right into our country, right into our living rooms, into our families. Richard, I can't begin to tell you how many emails I get, just over and over, people who are just telling their stories about what has happened inside their family.
But Bush is changing the tone.
That's usually my cue from my wife that I'm, pumping myself up too much before it's time to go home and try to sleep.
It's almost Mikey CP time.
Yeah, I know. The point I'm trying to make, Richard, is just the outrage that this crime family has done to this country and to our people. And by our people, I mean anyone who lives here. I don't give a damn if they're atheist or religious. I don't care what their skin color. I don't care what their national. You know, if you live here, this miserable son of a bitch has made it awful. Unless you're in that top 1%. Unless you have all the goodies and all the wealth and you want more, 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 more. Just like the German industrialists in post-World War I Germany. They had it all. Anything they wanted, as long as they just backed the dictator. That's going on in this country now. It's slowly building up. The analogies to Hitler and the German Reich are so dead on. Just absolute. There's no doubt here. There's no doubt here at all. The parallels are just so dead on. The only thing missing so far, are the concentration camps. That's what they were called first. Concentrate, where they concentrated. Where they. When I was a kid, I used to think that meant that's where they sent people to think. You know, concentration. I heard my grandparents talking about the concentration. I thought, why would they send people to camps to think? Concentrate. Concentrate, boy! Concentrate on your studies! It took a while to occur to me that that's not what the word meant. And then the construction of the death camps and the gas chambers and the ovens. Now, I don't know if Bush is as sick as Hitler was where it concerns this evil hatred of people for what they are. Bush is very good at disguise. Hitler didn't disguise it. You know, he blamed everything on the Jews. Everything. Now, Bush does it with Muslims. Yes, more and more it's creeping. Have you noticed that? This last Day of the Union address, you know, some of the adjectives are starting to fall off, just like in what Sim does in 1984, starting to get rid of those adjectives. Instead of separating the good Islamists from the bad Islamists, now all of a sudden, the distinction is starting to fall away. But so far, Bush hasn't directed it inward the way Hitler did against the Jews. Bush hasn't yet directed it inward against the Muslims that live in this country, or gay folk that live in this country, or non-Christians that live in this country. He hasn't done it yet. Is he going to do it? I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe we'll never get to the death camps. But when I think about what this man has done to what I believe to be my country, I weep. I just want to go someplace out in the woods somewhere and sit down and smoke a joint and get high as hell and just sit there and cry. I want your love to come to stay.
They didn't connect the dots. How come the dots weren't connected? Well, the Patriot Act helps us connect the dots. It is inexcusable to say, on the one hand, connect the dots and not give us a chance to do so. We've connected the dots, or trying to connect the dots.
Yeah. Be careful. The truth might slip out, you little rat bastard. Program engineered in New York tonight by Justin Yuen and Tim MacArthur and our resident rock star, Jason Isaac. Dee Neal is our associate producer. She handled your calls tonight. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall. It's webmaster at MikeMolloy.com. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives this program along with lots of other ones. Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. Catherine Bays, executive producer. Reg over at TV News Lies. I think it's Reg at TV News Live. Yeah, okay. Bottom line is that no one knows what happened on 9/11. There has been no investigation of the events of that day. None. Bush did not want any inquiry. And then wanted Kissinger to be in charge of an inquiry. Remember that? Finally, after a year, he allowed the Keene Commission to try to determine how to prevent another attack, not investigate what happened. When in history has this happened? Americans have been told to accept a version of the events of the worst attack on American soil that is so full of holes as to be laughable without any question. We cannot even raise legitimate questions about the discrepancies and anomalies of the version we are supposed to accept on faith, not fact, on faith. There has to be an official, impartial investigation based on all the evidence that has been unearthed by the independent 9/11 community. That's the only way we will ever know.
That kind of goes to one of the major things that's always bothered me about the Bush administration's attitude toward 9/11. I mean, if they were so upset about what happened to the 3,000 lost lives and the horrible tragedy, why did they work at every turn to block a legitimate investigation? Why did they refuse to turn over documents? Why did they stonewall congressional requests or grand jury requests for information, refuse to testify? Wouldn't you think that a commander-in-chief and an administration that was caring about its citizenry would want to move heaven and earth to do anything to find out exactly what happened to make damn sure it couldn't happen again? Why the obstructionist?
Right. Well, the quick answer, the easy answer for the right-wingers was that the Bush administration didn't want to suffer the embarrassment of false intelligence, which is I guess the cover story. But you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. Had Bush not had a hand in this, no document, no member of his administration would have been exempt from examination or questioning by this fake, phony-ass King Commission. And as Reg pointed out, as I'd forgotten how quickly we forget, Henry Kissinger was the one who was at, but remember what Kissinger said? I don't know. Because what he was supposed to do, reveal all of his contacts, his global contacts, to make sure he didn't have any conflicts. Henry Kissinger is a death's head. Were Henry Kissinger a little older and not Jewish, he would have been in the inner circle of Adolf Hitler. He's just a vile, vile, snake-like human being who relishes mass death in order to further the kind of capitalism that eventually will feed on itself. That's what Kissinger's about. And to think that Kissinger was supposed to be, you know, and so many Americans were willing to say, Henry Kissinger, okay, wasn't he Secretary of State? Yeah, he was. I remember Kissinger. Didn't he win the Nobel Prize for ending the war in Vietnam? Yeah, okay. You see how this works? But because Kissinger would have had to reveal his complicity through his business connections. There's just so much here, and as Reg points out, yeah, you know, I can sit here and tell you what's on my mind, you can sit and tell me what's on your mind, Truth Seeker, but and both opinions may be as removed from fact as North is from South. I'm saying I've reached that point where I believe, and belief is one thing, being presented with a set of facts is something else. Again, I understand that. How many people believe they were assaulted by somebody and then the DNA evidence comes back and it wasn't that person at all? I understand that. But in absence of absolute verifiable truth as to what happened on that horrible day, then I have to fall back on the only thing available to me. And that is the circumstantial evidence. People can be convicted. Rightfully, on circumstantial evidence. There doesn't have to be a smoking gun. There doesn't have to be a corpse. Circumstantial evidence can be powerful. That's why it's included in our criminal code. Beyond a reasonable doubt. That's where I'm at right now. Thanks for participating this week. I do appreciate it. I'm sorry we didn't get to more phone calls. I'll see you Monday. All right? Take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.